I'm really excited to be able to finally meet somebody that we've talked about a lot on the goods that I think has actually been a catalyst for a lot of good things, but he has gone through a really tough time. And he must have raised a wonderful son to be able to get to the point where they're both at right now. Let me just rewind a bit. So millennials are going to have to decide between their dreams and full-time care of their parents and friends. This is something I've had to do before, and it was never really a decision. It's just a reflex response. But you still have to sacrifice your dreams. You have to sacrifice your friends. And now, with coronavirus, with the pandemic, this has really exposed the limits and availability of care in Canada, in our nation's capital, too. And this has become crystal clear to my next guest, who's decided to do something about this. Now, I first introduced him to you when he was fighting for quality of death for his mother and quality of life for his father. And very sadly, at the beginning of lockdown, he lost his mom and feared he wouldn't be able to donate his liver to his ailing dad as planned. But success. The liver transplant happened, and Pops is back at home recovering. I even saw him eating ice cream too. So during a time when the world came down on his son, this man, my guest, decided to lift it up for many other people. So joining us right now, we have two guests. I'll introduce the first one to you, and I'll save the best one for after, and I'm sure that his son would agree. But the starter, the founder of Millennial Caregivers, an Ottawa businessman from Dan Rascal, and a lifesaver, Craig Connolly. Welcome back, sir.
Hi, Dahlia. Good morning.
To speak to you under these conditions now, how times have changed.
Oh, wow. Yeah, certainly things are very different than they were. I think we've spoken three times now, and each time I think it's leveled up and changed in new ways. But I'm excited to be back and speaking to you and on this platform.
When we spoke for the first time, Craig, it was a wretched time, and I would even say if that was not a rock bottom, I couldn't even imagine what a rock bottom would be. And to see how far you've come and what you've done through, I would imagine, the worst time of your life, I'm amazed by you.
The trees were thick. That's for sure.
Well, where are we at right now first?
Well, we're out of the forest.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I am now back home with Dad, and we're rocking and rolling. Like, his liver is firing at all levels, and I'm doing amazing. I'm healed up, and now we're ready to make some changes. Now we're ready to take our experience and turn it into something fruitful for others. Because if not that, what's it for?
I know that, from the first time we spoke, you spoke about the importance of quality of life and quality of death. And also, from the first time we spoke, when we were going through this whole process, you dealing with your mother, the state that she was in, and I believe that you had just lost her that first time we spoke. And in that time of grief and fighting to get your liver to your dad, you still told me of this plan you had for millennial caregivers. Where's that at now?
Well, we've done a lot of the groundwork. It hasn't been necessary. I mean, we're in the middle of a pandemic, so I guess it helps that we're at home and we have got our heads in the books, and we're doing the hard work to get this thing to where it needs to be. But we're excited that the website is very, very, very close to launching. We're happy with the branding we've got done from this local agency, Salt. They're incredible. And we are ready to launch this thing September 1st. So as of September 1st, Millennial Care will be something that can be visited across social media platforms. And essentially, it's going to be a storytelling platform, simply, that's going to feature the video care stories of millennial caregivers across this country. And speaking to what you said, the whole catalyst in for this is that you truly have to feel something and hear it to believe it. And you don't know the depths of what you can do until you do feel it and hear it and see it. And I think that there, in terms of health literacy in Canada, there needs to be maybe a new set of data, a new kind of data, qualitative data, you know, that we can see, that we can hear, that we can sense, and that maybe will affect policy change in a new level, on a new level, perhaps. I know what I saw needs to be shared, and that's the catalyst. And we live in a time that we're so connected that we have the power to do that. So, you know, and we're doing it right now.
If you're just joining, I'm Dahlia. This is The Goods, and Craig Connolly is with us. I'm going to introduce you to his pops, and I'm going to introduce me to his pops, Rodney, in just a couple of moments. But first, we're finding out about, while Craig is going through such a challenge, seems like it's not strong enough a word to emphasize what you were dealing with, but going through such a challenging time, you took those things that you went through and you have created this program, this organization, this way to help give better compassionate care for quality of life and quality of death. And you've noticed this. It's based on the last few months within the system dealing with two very sick people, two very sick parents. You took your observations. And what have you found when it comes to those observations, and how do you want to surmount them or surmount those challenges that the country is facing?
Well, we're certainly faced with, like, the veil has come back, and COVID-19 has pulled back, I think, the veil on the true limits of care in our country. And the experience I had in the two health tracks revealed those things to me before the pandemic. They just become, you know, clearer for the rest of the community and the rest of the country. So the plan is simply to take those observations and then turn them into real, transparent, authentic stories that can be seen. You know, and we want to start with our own, and we believe that that's important. It's important to share your story first. And you got to give to get back, and our story is one I think that's going to turn heads and change people's perceptions and perspectives. Some of the things that we dealt with, like, you know, ratios of nurses, wait times, you know, simple things like the buttons on the outsides of buildings that are supposed, you know, hospitals, parking machines, and these are little things, but those little things do add up. And they can break, you know, sometimes it's the straw that breaks the camel's back when you're in the midst of such hardship. But those are little things compared to, you know, lack of resources, lack of proper financial resources. And then what I believe is somewhat to be bureaucracies, you know, somewhat self-fulfilling bureaucracies that protect themselves. And, you know, private health care has a sordid history and a lot of debate around it. And right now I think we're going to be faced with a big debate and what, you know, the privatization of health and how we deal with that and how we shape the future and move forward is going to be very dependent on a special generation of people. And we're already inheriting and we're already solutioning this as millennials. You know, if you go to Bayview Yards in Ottawa, it's full of these companies, these startups, and they're now faced with these challenges, and there's these young people are populating these companies, and we have to turn the ship.
You know what's frightening to me, Craig, is, you know, you're talking about one side of the equation which has a lot of little and big problems in it, you know, when you're looking at all of those things that you've just mentioned. And the other side to this is because of the pandemic, we've created or we've landed in such a terrible economic time, and we can foresee that things are going to get worse. And this is going to greatly affect generations to come. And so now the financial position of the generations to come, the financial position of the older generations, the most vulnerable generations, is going to be entirely weakened. So we're going to have people who have been weakened who are the caregivers. We're going to have people who have been weakened who are the ones who need the care. And then we also have a system that needs to be fixed.
Absolutely.
So this is a massive problem.
Massive. And it's been massive before this. Now it's hyper-massive. So yeah, I think generations need to speak to one another. You know, that's why health literacy, I feel like, needs to have an injection of something new. I'm not trying to commercialize care. I'm not trying to make healthcare cool. You know, we're not, certainly. We're trying to make it, of course, appealing to want to champion the cause. And it's one we want people to champion before, like you said, before it just, you know, happens to them. I remember, like, in high school, home ec, and I was like, oh, I don't want to do home ec. Ugh. You know, I don't want to learn how to bake a cake and clean a, you know. But those things and those little things we didn't learn, and how to do taxes and those little things, all those little things that I wish I knew, you know, retrospectively, I certainly think now that there could be an equivalent, some sort of millennial caregiving program across our country, you know, something virtual. I have visions. We're gonna see where they go, but there needs to be an injection of vitality into the millennial generation. And you know, I want to destroy stigma. Millennials have a really bad rap, and I'm one of them. Right? I'm an old one. I'm an 83 baby. So. I'm right on the threshold, but, you know, we face a lot of stigma, and I think that we're going to, you know, with millennial care, I want to take that back. I want to turn that around.
We're catching up with a guest who I first introduced to you when he was fighting for quality of death for his mother and life for his father. He has gone on to now, during a pandemic, during the craziest time in his life, he creates this program that's going to help give compassionate health care and quality of life, hopefully quality of death, to Canadians, because we need to start taking a closer look at our millennial caregivers. So that's Craig Connolly who's done this. And during the pandemic, he was able to finally donate a piece of his liver to his father to save his father's life. And this is the man who gave Craig life. So I'm thankful to both of these individuals, and I'm very happy to be able to introduce Rodney. But I just feel like I've only known him as Pops. I had to ask for his name after all of this time about talking about him. May I call you Pops, Rodney?
Good morning, Dad. Yeah, well, you can call me Pops. Yeah, sure. A lot of people do. I do go by Rod as well. But Pops is kind of my given name now. Doesn't matter who I'm associated with, whether it's my grandson or whether it's my own children or even friends, it's Pops.
Well, you have given us something really special, Pops, in your son. And so to have a son who fights so much and so hard for his loved ones and people that he doesn't even know, that tells me that you must have given him something really special to get him to this place.
Yes, Daddy. You know, we were blessed, my wife and I, with two children, Craig and Kayla. Craig was a mastermind behind this whole journey. It's been an incredible journey, Dahlia, a journey that started for me 20 years ago. Due to an issue I was having with a drug I was taking for hypertension. And so my journey is a long one. The past 5 years have been really the journey that Craig looked after both me and Mom. I call her Mom, Bertha. And, you know, it's 2 months in 2 days that I had a new life. I was given a new life. And I rehabbed in Toronto. I've come home. I continue my rehab for the next several months. And I am so blessed. I'm just so so happy. I can feel how my new liver has transformed me back into the person I was. Because I was a very, very sick person, Dahlia, long before I was admitted to the hospital. I didn't realize with the ascites and the delirium and how bad it really was. And my experience over the last year has just been, it's been such an emotional ride, but it's been such an incredible, incredible journey. And Craig is not only my son now, he's my best friend. He's everything. And I am so grateful to be able to live. I'm sorry. It's hard not to get emotional, but I'm just so fortunate. And it hasn't been a journey without challenge. You know, sitting in the Civic Hospital as my wife was passing away at St. Vincent's was the most difficult thing in my life, having been mother for all my life since kindergarten. It was such a challenging night, and Craig and my sister Doris were so strong in being there for her. And I'm finally home now, and I'm beginning to put the pieces together and to grieve and to start my life again. And I got plans for the future, and I want to be involved. I want to be involved as a volunteer. I want to reach out to the community. I want to be a participant in Craig's journey with Millennium Care. There's so much I want to give back because I have been given so much.
You know, you have just been through not only the most difficult time for the world, but the most difficult time in your life. You lose someone. You lose your wife. You are fighting for your life. And you make it through not only sounding incredibly strong, but wanting to give back to other people. I think that this speaks volumes for how much your son is going to be able to give because of how much you've given and how much I still foresee you giving.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, I know it's, I'm so looking forward to the launch you know, I'm just one story, Dahlia. You know, the Toronto Transplant Hospital, there are miracles happening every day. You know, there are people having life-saving, and I got to share stories with other people when I was in the rehab, people who have had acute brain injuries and so on, but to listen to their stories, they're different than mine, but they still had a journey of an incredible and unbelievable experiences. And we are so blessed to have a medical system now because, you know, if it wasn't for the doctors and the surgeons and all of the medical staff and the support people, we have the best facility in the world when it comes to transplants. And the people that that cared for me during my journey post surgery was incredible, I wouldn't want to call it an experience because it. Someday I'll write my memoirs on the whole journey for the past 20 years. It gave me something to do here in the next, hopefully 15, 20 years. So far, so good. Everything is working so well. The liver is not rejecting whatsoever. They're starting to reduce some of my medications, and you know, I'm getting my exercise. I'm eating the right foods. I'm managing things. So, I'm a new, you know, my brain power is back.
Well, I have a final question for you because we're only 90 seconds over time, but why not go even more over time? Because I like you, Pops.
Okay.
You have thanked Craig. You have thanked all of these people who have helped you, and you are planning to give back. I also want to give you the opportunity right now, because while you were fighting for your life, you lost a life that was most cherished to you, and that was your wife. What's your favorite memory together?
My favorite memory?
Yeah.
Was the day that my wife proposed to me. She actually came home from college, and she said, "Rodney, we have to get married." And I said, "I want to marry you. Where's your dad?" And she looked after everything. And within a month, we were boarding a train in Gaspé, heading to Ottawa with no work, no jobs, $1,000 in the trunk. And we built our life and never looked back. And had, as I said, two beautiful children. And, I know life ended early for Bertha. She would have loved to have experienced the grandchild. But such is life. And we must pull together. And I have a very fortunate family. I have a great circle of friends, a great circle of support. And I'll have memories of Bertha forever. I sit every night. And I play music, and I talk to her, and she's still here. Anyhow, I know I've taken up your time.
You haven't taken up any of my time. You've given us precious memories, and I thank you for that. And may Bertha's memory be a blessing. And I know I never knew her, but I already know your family so very well, sir. And I know she's smiling at everything you're doing. Thank you so much for sharing such a personal part of your story. And I have to say, I absolutely loved every word of it. And she proposed to you. That is beautiful.
Thank you very much, Dahlia.
Thanks, Dahlia.
Rod Connolly, Craig Connolly in the background saying thank you. It's Millennial Caregivers. Such an incredible story to come out of the worst time of people's lives.